Parinuka Marinuka, Nga Lou Bennett, Nga Yori Yora Jajarang, Nga Winibaya. Hello, my name is Lou Bennett. I am of the Yori Yora and the Jajarang. I am a song woman. My language is spoken traditionally along the Murray River, the Yorta Yorta Dreaming, which we call Dangala, and the Jajarang language group comes from the Castlemaine, Bendigo, Daylesford area along the Colobin, Loddon and Compaspe rivers. Well, my favourite phrase in Yorta Yorta would have to be the very first phrase I remember as a child, Domininiarka. This means my precious one or my precious child. And it was something that my grandmother and my mother used to say to us kids before we went to bed. Doma, dear, nini, my, yalka, child.
Hi, I'm Joel and this is Off Track. We'll catch up in a minute. Let's just listen to Lou Bennett.
A lot of non-Aboriginal people, they're speaking language and not even really comprehending that they're actually speaking Yorta Yorta. And there's three main ones that I can think of off the top of my head. The first one, Echuca, where I come from. Echuca is derived from the word Itika, which means the meeting of. You put the prefix Wal or Walla in front of it. Walitika, that is my tribe of the Yorta Yorta. And Walitika means the meeting of the waters. Moama, across the river. In our language, most times we put the emphasis on the first syllable, so this word would have been pronounced and is pronounced Mom, which is the place of the dead. This is where we buried our people. Another town in Victoria, just south of Shepparton, called Kayala. We use the first syllable, Kayala, and we create the K more like a G and K combination. This word is the word of the Goulburn River, where that river actually passes through.
Lou Bennett, songwoman. Through her music, Lou's bringing the Yorta Yorta language to thousands of people, and in doing so, she's keeping her mother tongue alive. That story from ABC Open producer Susie Taylor, it's part of the pilot for Mother Tongue, a national Indigenous language project that's being rolled out over the next 6 to 12 months. I'll play another cut from Susie later in the show. If you haven't already guessed, this week, Off Track's heading around the country, bringing you the best of ABC Open. So let's catch up with the Illawarra's Sean O'Brien. Sean recently spent some time with John Lascelles, a man with a unique twin passion.
My name is John Lascelles. My passions are photography and cycling. The camera that I'm using is what's called a Linhof large format camera. It's a type of camera that goes back to the early days of photography and really hasn't changed much in 100 years. I love the craft of the darkroom using the old technology of film and chemicals, printing things by hand, and I also love cycling, just the joy of being outside. It's that sensation of moving through the landscape, feeling the air on your skin, the different smells of the bush. It's just fantastic. And going over the crest of a hill and seeing the vista of a view open up to you, there's nothing like it. The way I combine these two activities is to photograph areas that I've ridden through where I've had a particularly enjoyable ride. I get ideas on the bike, visual ideas, something striking, you know, a nice tree or a curve of a road or a rock formation, and I think, that would make an interesting photograph. I will go back later with my large format camera because it's too heavy to carry on a bike, And I'll take a number of shots exploring the area, trying to capture some of the road and some of the landscape around it. And often when I get there, I'm confronted with a whole lot of problems that I can't actually put the camera in the spot I want, where I first saw the scene that I want, because it's too dangerous. Getting on the road, you know, I've got to get off the road, and then I have to adjust my approach and come up with a different angle, different composition to get what I want. And sometimes what looked good on the bike might not look so good when I'm standing still, and so I might pursue a different idea. But it's the being on the bike and seeing the scene as the initial trigger. I'm not after pristine wilderness photographs. The idea of pathways winding through the landscape, signs of current occupation and even previous occupation, the remnants of past human activities there, is something I find interesting and try to convey in the photographs. You have to take several pictures. The first one might not work, but I don't worry about that. I just start, and by taking one photograph, that leads me on into the next, and then the next, and so on, until I get what I want. And of course, it's not until I'm back in the darkroom and I process the negatives that I can see what I've got, unlike, say, a digital camera where you can see it straight away. And digital's wonderful as well, but for me, I enjoy the craft of using the old technology, the skill of being in the dark room, and the craft of printing I find more satisfying than staring at a computer screen. The things I've learnt about the region I live through riding and photography, it's taught me to appreciate the landscape around here and to appreciate its variety. It's a beautiful area. It's a mixture of kind of English parkland and manicured landscape contrasted with sandstone eucalypt forest. So you've got both aspects up here, it's a particularly good area for cycling, I must say. There's some wonderful roads around, right out to Bundanoon and Wingelow and out to Robertson and all places. It's really good.
John Lascelles speaking with the ABC Open's Sean O'Brien. And this is Off Track here on RN. I'm Joel Werner. How many languages do you speak? Apart from English, I can ask for directions to the train station in schoolboy German and say hello in a handful of other European languages, and that's about it. The thing is, I don't even know how to say hello in any of the languages right on my doorstep, languages that are thousands of years old. At the top of the show, we met Yorta Yorta language songwoman Lou Bennett. Up next, Susie Taylor brings us the story of Yorta Yorta teacher Auntie Sharon Atkinson.
I'm sending you this postcard as I sit beside the river in the homelands of the Yorta Yorta nations. My countryside reminds me of a story of the formation of the Murray River, which in Yorta Yorta language is known as Dungulla. Our story about Dungulla is a story about how the river, known as the Murray River, was formed back in the creation period. And it goes something like this. Bayami Watcha Gumuka Galim Mama Yulila Wahamunch. Bayami sent his old woman down out of the high country with the yam stick to dig for food, and she journeyed across the flat and waterless plain. Bayami Watcha Dunning. He also sent his giant stake along to keep an eye on her. Dangaja Dabura, Dora Garnko. She walked for many weary miles, drawing a line in the sand with her yam stick. Gawaja, Gumuka Gabai, Dunai. Behind her came the snake, sliding in and out of her line and making the curves of the riverbed with his body. Bayami spoke in a voice of thunder. Lightning flashed. Kokora Datiwala Kabayaman Nonugali Banma. Rain fell and the water came flowing down the track the old woman and the snake had bathed. Garyanak Dagabai Wamandaman. After many moons she came to the sea and went to sleep in a cave, while her dogs ran off and kicked up the sand hills about the river mouth. Dangala. And speaking of dogs, my dogs are barking now. Oh, I have to go and feed them. Bitter. Goodbye.
Yorta Yorta teacher, Auntie Sharon Atkinson. That audio postcard produced by ABC Open's Susie Taylor. Imagine devoting your life to the study of something you'll hardly ever get to see. For particle physicists, this is probably a given, but you wouldn't think wildlife ecologists would have the same problem. Chris Allen is a senior threatened species officer with the New South Wales Office of Environment and Heritage. His Higgs boson is the koala population in the forests of Bermagui on the New South Wales far south coast. ABC Open contributor Indigo Wood joined Chris on a koala survey.
We're in Tanger State Forest on a fire trail. There's eight of us here, a couple of environmental science students. The majority of us are locals from this particular region. I've lived in this area almost all my life, and most of the locals are aware that there are koalas in this bit of forest. But it's only in recent years that we've had a clear picture of how many koalas are out here and where exactly they are. We're lucky to have an incredibly knowledgeable koala researcher living in this region. And today, we're helping out on a long-term survey.
My name's Chris Allen. I work with the Office of Environment and Heritage. And my job title is Senior Threatened Species Officer. But my main focus has been on koalas.
So, just describe for me the boundaries of the area that these surveys cover.
Essentially, it's between the Bermagui River to the north and the Bega River to the south. What I'll do is I'll mark this waypoint so we don't have any mistake about where we come back to.
The fire trail that we're on runs along the ridge, the top of a hill. It gets pretty steep. There's a few rocks around and a lot of fallen branches, so we have to be pretty careful where we put our feet.
Now, how are we doing? Is everybody all right? You got something itching?
I think just bitten. Just an ant, I think.
Okay. Can you tuck those in?
I can, yes.
Now, just to share a little bit of history, the trigger for the surveys that commenced here in 2007 were a report from two young kurilas who were riding down here on bikes, and they saw a female with young go across this trail. And it really looks, you know, you look at this country and you think, my goodness, really, no self-respecting koala would come near it because it is almost pure silvertop ash. But in fact, there's quite a diversity of species.
What is the significance, do you think, of this particular population of koalas?
Well, look, one thing to say about this population is that it is what we call a low-density population. The animals are widely scattered, with each animal having a large home range, which may be up to 50 hectares. The koala numbers might be low, but they extend over a very large area. And I suspect that this is a characteristic of many koala populations. And these koalas are clearly using this kind of habitat in a very sophisticated way.
I'm Victoria Reid and I live here in Wobbingo.
What's your interest in this koala program?
Oh, well, they've had a rough past and a rough current life, and they need someone to think about them and do everything they can to help sustain their numbers. I haven't seen a koala around here. My neighbour has heard them, and I've certainly seen some scats, but I've never seen a wild koala up a tree.
Well, I grew up in this region and neither have I, so there you go.
I'm Pauline Mendes. I'm a local resident. I live in Tanger.
How long have you been here?
I've lived in the area for over 25 years.
Have you ever seen a koala?
No, I haven't.
Look, we hardly ever see koalas. Let's be clear about this. In these forests, being the coastal forests, probably in the past 15 years, I've seen maybe 7 or 8 koalas. So very, very few.
Yeah, look at this.
Look at this.
Straight away.
How about that?
Wow.
Fresh ass.
So, this is brilliant, this pellet. Just brilliant.
There's another one?
Is it? Yeah.
So just describe for me what you've got in your hand.
Okay, well, we've got 2 koala pellets here. They're an olive green colour, shaped actually like a large olive pip. The distinctive characteristics of koala pellets is the longitudinal ridgelines.
So fairly fresh. How long ago do you reckon the koala's been around?
These would be probably only 3 or 4 days old at most. Actually, that one there looks quite fresh. So the koala would have climbed up, and often as they're climbing up, they'll drop a pellet or two. So we mark this. We mark every location where we find pellets.
Okay, so we just found 5 pellets under a tree as we were walking through the bush. But the one thing that keeps getting hammered home here is that this survey has to be unbiased, which means we can only measure the activity of the koalas inside specific survey zones, which are dictated by grid lines on a map. Those particular pellets were under a tree literally just outside one of our survey sites, so they won't be included in this particular survey. But it is a pretty cool way to kick things off.
Basically, we have now come to our location that's on the map. What we do here is we establish a centre tree, and our survey site is what we call a radial plot. Our first task is to select 30 trees, and the only criteria we use are that the trees are alive and that they are over 150 millimetres diameter at breast height. And so we work up sequentially to 30 trees.
Three. My name's Carly, and I've helped out with Chris and his team for the past year or so.
But what are you actually up to with the tape and the trees?
Oh, I'm checking for any trees that are above 150 mils diameter breast height, and then marking them with the flagging tape. And you call out the number so we know when we've got up to 30 trees. But before we mark them, we've got to look up, check they're alive. That's a big one.
Hello? 19. Thank you very much.
20, 21. Do you reckon this tree's actually alive?
Oh, God. Okay.
It's like died out at the top and then regrown.
That could be a vine.
You kidding?
Because a lot of the leaves I'm seeing are from this tree. Yeah.
That's the last one, Kylie.
I work on my hands and knees, but people may want to squat. Quite a lot of bending over here, you just need to watch your back. So this technique is used across much of the koala range now. There are people scratching around in the bush like this all over the joint.
Just describe for me what you're up to right now.
Yeah, hi, I'm Norm. I'm working close to the trunk of the tree because that's where most of its droppings tend to be. We just don't have time to scratch through the litter for many metres from a tree. So basically it's just 1 metre round, and we've covered 50% of the probability of finding some sort of marking of a koala. We can't see any koalas here, but the droppings are always there, so if we can find them, we can build up a picture of where they are, where they're moving.
This survey method that we use, it's a relatively non-intrusive method, and that's really, really important. You know, we don't have to haul the animals out of trees and stick collars on them and stuff like that. We can also get the DNA from the population. We can also tell whether there's mother and young around, understanding what they're feeding, the social dynamics. The difficulty is that it is resource hungry. We've done up to 600 locations through the forest, 18,000 trees searched for koala pellets. That's a lot of trees.
So how are your knees after all that?
Oh, look, my knees are still pretty good, really. So far, so good.
Looks like wallaby to me.
I've got a wombat, I think.
Should we get excited? What have you found, Carly?
Not excited. And look, it's fairly fine on the inside like a koala poo, but the outside's very grassy. So I'd say it's a bit of wallaby poo, unfortunately.
It's got to be the only thing you do in the world where you get excited about finding poo.
Even if you're the best searcher in the world, you're likely to miss them if there's a lot of dense undergrowth, just because you can't scratch around as easily. And sometimes, like in the draw, you can be so focused, but you accidentally move a leaf that's got a koala pellet curled up in it. Or, yeah, it's just one of those things.
So how many searches do you reckon you would go without finding anything?
I think Chris said it's roughly one in five plots. It does depend on the area. Other days you strike it lucky and every plot you go to has some, so it's so variable.
Last tree for the plot, girls. Any luck?
Oh, not yet. Never say never.
That's it. Every now and then a pellet has been found on the last tree.
The last tree, yes, it has happened.
So we've been in the bush for about 4 hours now. We've surveyed two sites and had no luck whatsoever. It really does say something, I guess, about the dedication of the guys who come out here looking for these pellets. So, Chris, it's kind of amazing to think that you've built this incredibly detailed data set for koala populations, and all the information that you've gathered was on your hands and knees looking for their poo.
Look, I mean, there's no question in my mind that the method that we use is a fantastically informative way of learning about koalas. And, okay, so the focus is koala poo, but the ramifications of the work is just so big. The science behind it, the understanding of a koala ecology, understanding of the animal, all those things flow from that. I just regard it as an amazing privilege to be involved in this work. So, it's a great part of my life.
Chris Allen speaking with ABC Open contributor Indigo Wood. That story produced by Vanessa Milton. So, from a location where the closest you might get to spotting a koala is on your knees looking for their poo, to somewhere they're much easier to spot. We catch up with ABC Open's Emma Pedler at Makira Station on the Eyre Peninsula in South Australia.
This oasis is Makira Station. It's winter now, so the ground is covered by rich moss, thick grass, and hundreds of clumps of jonquils. When the breeze blows, their rich smell wafts around. It's delicious. Makira is a 30k drive south of Port Lincoln, not far from Sleaford, or the National Park. Today, we came out here for a barbecue lunch and to see the koalas. The koalas here at Makira aren't even native to the area. They were introduced from Kangaroo Island back in the 1940s. I found this koala in a tree near the old homestead, and after walking around, we spotted about five more, not far away. The trees they live in have so much character, and they reach lazily up into the sky. My inner child sees so many perfect trees for cubbies out here. There's so much to explore. The old limestone fences from sheep farming back in the 1800s, the old stone homestead, and the wild bush landscape, my favourite. When I have kids, I'm going to bring them out here for a picnic and explore my inner child once again.
Emma Pedler at Makira Station in South Australia. That's it for Off Track's ABC Open special. Thanks to all the contributors and producers that were involved in bringing you today's show. Do you have a story that you're just itching to tell? Why not get in touch with your local ABC Open producer and make it happen? Just follow the link on the Off Track website, which you can access via the RN homepage. And that's all there is for this week. Until next time, bye for now.
4 a wrestler, Olympics is the ultimate.
Which is why the IOC's decision to remove it from the list of core Olympic sports shook up the game.
The scoring system needed to be changed so the athlete who deserved to win was the one who actually ended up winning.
Does wrestling have a future as an Olympic sport? What's gone wrong for wrestling? That's Rear Vision. Download or stream this program from the Radio National website.